Hi, and welcome to Revision Media. You're live here with me, Paul Stevenson, on this Thursday, the 11th of June, 2020. That's through that from 10 till 11 p.m. here in the UK, where I am in London. 5 till 6 p.m. Or sorry, is it 5 till 5 till 6 p.m. Eastern Time, wherever you are around the world. Welcome to the show. I hope you had a great day, or you will have a great day, depending on the time zone there. Before I go on, I will say support Revision Media. We are 100% listener supported, and we are, you know, a dying breed of radio stations that actually have free speech in this world, and which used to be something we took for granted. But it's, if it wasn't bad enough, it's getting increasingly worse and precarious over recent events with this so-called Black Lives Matter movement after the death of George Floyd. So do support us if you have the means. We appreciate that. If you want to support me and my YouTube channel, you can do that on PayPal, Stevenson_P5@sky.com. I'm just going to see if I can find the number here. If anybody wants to call in with a question or a comment on recent events, very precarious times, of course. We've had the coronavirus and all that. And now we've had this absolute anarchy and chaos brought about, apparently brought about by the death of George Floyd. But we'll discuss all that tonight, and we'll look at what's really going on. As usual, deceptions at work. So the number to call out or to call in is 855-492-6049. Let's see if I can. If you're calling from outside the US, you'll need the prefix code. Country code, which is the 44 for the UK. So what you need to do is you need to enter the international code prefix by country, which if you're calling, I believe for me, it's the UK, it's 44. Wait for the prompt, enter the call-in number, which is 855-492-6049, and then press the hash tag. I think that's correct. There is also a UK number here, 0203514-1993. So I think either or of those options will get you through if you wanted to call in.
I think just an exit. I think that's just another exit code option.
Give out the number again, Richard, please.
Okay, so it would just be 855-492-6049. So that's the code.
So the majority of people will be calling from the US anyway, so it's just 855-492-6049. So I'd love to hear from you if you've got any anything you'd like to say or questions or comments on the recent unprecedented chaos perpetrated in the name of caring about black people, which, as you can probably guess from my tone, I believe has nothing to do with Black Lives Mattering. First of all, why is it assumed it's racist? You know, why is it assumed? Why is the narrative automatically it's a white cop on a black guy instead of a police on a citizen? And then you've got the stats and the police numbers as to whether there's any truth to this narrative of police brutality. And general systemic oppression towards black people by police and right across all the institutions. Because, of course, it isn't just the police. It's the whole institutions of America. And we've had it go across the Atlantic at breakneck speed. This thing spreads. This is as contagious as the coronavirus, it would seem. The statistics... The U.S. population has 13% of the demographic there made up by black people. Despite that, they make up 37% of arrests for violence are on the black community. Arrests for robbery, 54% of arrests for robbery are committed by black people. And arrests for murder, 53% are of arrests are on the black community for murder. So despite the small population, you're seeing a massive overrepresentation there in arrests for violence, robbery, and murder committed by black people, black citizens. And despite that, the actual reality is deaths suffered by the black community at the hands of police. We're not talking about, you know, George Floyd type deaths here. We're talking about general deaths occurred, bearing in mind how much black crime there is, including 53% of arrests for murder. A lot of these murders that the black community suffer will be probably armed black men, probably the majority of them. But anyway, that figure is 25%. So it's a pretty low representation of murder suffered by the black community, despite an overrepresentation in general crime, in general violence, robbery, and murder. On the other hand, 40% of deaths suffered by the police are perpetrated by black people. So this narrative, the whole outrage should probably be police lives matter, because there's 40% of police are killed by black people. That, you know, and bearing in mind the 25% death toll, would probably, you know, this is in a climate of politically correct madness where police are scared of killing black people or you know, or being over aggressive because of this type of George Floyd situation. It probably should be higher, and maybe that's the reason that you're having such a high death toll by police at the hands of black people, because they're maybe not firing when they should do, because they're scared. But anyway, whatever the reason, 25% of deaths are suffered by black people at the hands of police. So you could, 75% there are either whites, or, you know, or a mixture of white people, Hispanics, or whatever else. So it's hardly, the data hardly backs up the narrative here, as usual. Just like the coronavirus, when they destroyed the economy, and we haven't even seen the full implications of that yet. Nigel Farage, who many of you know, he's a very, very outspoken and very involved with the Brexit here of leaving that other EU monstrosity. He's lost his job. He was fired at LBC Radio today. Of course, we've had statues being taken down. We've had, you know, TV series, even in the noughties, which have been banned now because they're too racist. I mean, this really is, you know, Marxist stuff. In fact, the you know, it's revolutionary stuff. And the Black Lives Matter website itself states that their demands are the abolition of the family, capitalism, and the police. Not much about Black Lives Mattering in there, and very much sort of Communist Manifesto stuff. So that's what we're dealing with. Multiculturalism, it's hardly a great advertisement, is it, for it? It's a mess. You wonder why people, sane people, don't want multiculturalism. It's nothing to do with the fact you're racist. You don't want this chaos. It's to call it foolish would be the understatement of the century. Boy, is this not a great advertisement for mass immigration and multiculturalism, because a significant enough people, see, even well-meaning people, and plenty of black people are wise to the fact that they're being exploited and this narrative is manipulating them, and it's all about big government and big despotic government, particularly Democrats wanting to overthrow Trump by creating this oppression narrative so they can appeal to this oppressed group. Because if you want to appeal to an oppressed, victimized group, whose wounds and pains that you're going to heal with free money, of course, then you need to have that group there to appeal to, so you can, you know, you can carry out your power grab and bring in your despotic, abominably huge socialist government. And more black and other minorities are becoming wise to this nonsense and recognize the exploitation. And it's insulting for a lot of them. But, you know, any, the thing is it enough? You know, is there enough people who are wise to it? Because there seems to be more people, in my opinion, are deceived by it, of, you know, of any ethnicity, because a lot of this is driven by this, by these privileged, genuinely white privileged wankers at the universities who have their head full of Jewish revolutionary ideas. So we have a massive part of our own population, of the white population, who are a massive problem. And they're all being manipulated by, let's say, more nefarious, underhand, sinister forces that also dwell among us. There in the background, like weeds blending in, often camouflaged, you know, entangling themselves with the other plants, at times hiding in plain sight, orchestrating and pulling the strings. The invisible conductor of the symphony of engineered multicultural chaos. Any of you who are listeners to the show know who and what I'm talking about, but there was a Nobel Prize writer for literature who probably put it better than I ever could, and earned the right to put it better than I ever did, considering he spent half his life in the gulags, in the Bolshevik hellhole of what was Russia in the 20th century. And he said, quote, "You must understand, the leading Bolsheviks who took over Russia were not Russians. They hated Russians. They hated Christians. Driven by ethnic hatred, they tortured and slaughtered millions of Russians without a shred of human remorse. It cannot be understated that the Bolsheviks committed the greatest human slaughter of all time. The fact that most of the world is ignorant and uncaring about this enormous crime is proof that the global media is in the hands of the perpetrators." Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And we know whose hands the global media is in, and that's who's pulling the strings here and orchestrating this chaos. And it is a mess. And, you know, there's a statue they pulled down in a town over here called Bristol. They were unchallenged by the police. They dragged it and threw it into a river. And the hatred of the frenzy of these people. Talk about, first they came for Edward Colston. And the reason his great crime was that he had slaves back in the, 200 years ago or whatever, you know. First they came for Edward Colston, but I'll tell you, if this keeps up, and if the pass that Black Lives Matter receive and the ground that they are gaining, how long is it before they're dragging Nigel Farage out, or a real living being with blood running through his veins, rather than a statue? This is where this leads, and people need to understand this. We cannot give ground to these people, because it will end up in absolute slaughter, the kind of slaughter that Alexander Solzhenitsyn talked about, because it's the same people who are driving it. The gulags are coming to the West if we're not very careful. Now, Nigel Farage, as I say, was sacked from his job. And in part, it was probably, I think, as a result of this video, because free speech is no longer in this country anymore. And the media, they're all just a bunch of woke, far-left, Marxist-Leninist echo chambers. We don't have, even our right-wing media are not right-wing, even remotely, even conservative, for want of a better word. I don't even like using these terms, left and right-wing, really, because I think, these people traditionally are far left, but what they call far right is not far right. It's just people with common sense and decency. And don't happen to be revolutionaries. Here's a little clip. I think this is partly what led. Listen to this radical thing. I mean, this is probably more edgy, because Nigel's realized that YouTube's a bigger vehicle than his LBC radio show. So he's doing more YouTube videos. And this video's got 233,000 views, and it pretty much got him the sack. He's been in that job for 3 years, and he's about the only person worth listening to in LBC, and he's pretty moderate himself and a bit of a cock at times.
Well, I don't know whether like me or utterly appalled by what happened yesterday. We saw, of course, the tearing down of the Edward Colston statue in Bristol. We saw, for the second day in a row, Winston Churchill's statue in Parliament Square being defaced. This time, though, with a mob around the statue screaming Churchill was a racist. We saw another assault on the cenotaph, this time with some yob climbing up there and trying to set a fire with a cigarette lighter to the Union flag. These were just some of the highlights from what happened in the United Kingdom yesterday. It's not as if it was a surprise. After all, this all first unfolded last Wednesday outside the streets of Downing Street when, you know, this Black Lives Matter movement was supposed to be so peaceful and so wonderful. Oh, look at the BBC, they'll tell you what a wonderful organisation it is. And it turned violent and ugly last Wednesday. It got even worse on Saturday. And then we saw those scenes of yesterday. There are now over 50 Metropolitan Police officers that have been injured, some of them seriously. And yet, my argument here isn't against equality of opportunity. It's not to say there may not still be things in society that aren't perfectly fair, but it is to say this, and to say it very, very clearly. This Black Lives Matter movement is a dangerous Marxist organisation hell-bent on anarchy, and we need to wake up, get some facts into our heads, and understand what it is we're fighting. The main agenda of the Black Lives movement and Black Lives Matters is the defunding of the police force. That's right. They want to effectively close down the established police force in the United States of America. And that's what the key activists in this country want to do as well. They're aiming at a radical redistribution of wealth. They're hinting at assets being taken from private companies and put into the hands of workers. I mean, look, this is a little bit like, you know, the 1917 Lenin Manifesto, which saw the communist revolution in Russia. That's the kind of thing that we're dealing with here. And it's very heavily funded. They're not short of money. You know, they got some big backers, Soros, others, some very big backers of this movement who want to fundamentally overturn the norms of society as we see them today. You see, when I see Matt Hancock, Boris Johnson, they're in the House of Commons saying Black Lives Matters, in fact, in Hancock's case, parroting it over and over again, as if to say, look, I'm really one of the good people. This is not an argument about what had happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis. It's not about that. It's not about equality of opportunity. It's about an organization that is hell-bent on changing society and prepared to use violence and anarchy to do so. And yet, have you seen or heard anything from the Prime Minister over the course of Saturday and Sunday? Late last night, he put out a tweet, you know, saying how he regretted what had gone on and how people would be brought to justice. Well, I'm not too sure. I'm confident about that. As yet, not a single person has been arrested for tearing down the statue.
The great Boris Johnson, who's written a book about his hero, Winston Churchill, likes to pride himself on Winston Churchill. These people have been defecating to Winston Churchill's statue. It hasn't just been some fringe characters from history who owned slaves or knew somebody who owned slaves or had a cousin whose uncle's mother and best friend had owned slaves. You're talking about Winston Churchill. And Johnson's been pretty much silent. I saw in an article today where they were talking about they were going to tear down some more statues, and the government said, well, let the police decide themselves what to do. Rather than ordering the police force to do what they're actually supposed to do, which is to protect private property, and in this case, public property, if Johnson hasn't got a backbone when it comes to protecting the statue of his great hero and a symbol of freedom in the West here that we're all told anyway, regardless of getting into the revisionist of history, this country has this as Churchill as a figure of liberating you know, and regardless of the British Empire, there was a lot of people in this country died for what the for freedom and you know, that they believed they were fighting for. And it's Western heritage. It's the history, the heritage, and the identity of this country, which is directly under attack. And Johnson has nothing to say. Just, oh, let them crack on. Let the police decide. So if they do, they do. They don't, they don't. I mean, he's got a chance to actually, you know, to fight against the real enemy here, Boris Johnson, if he wants to be like his hero Churchill. And he's not, you know, he hasn't got a spine.
And indeed for desecrating war memorials in this country. There is a vacuum, a complete vacuum of political leadership. It was also astonishing that Sir Keir Starmer yesterday said absolutely nothing that was going on. And it is because they all fear being labelled racist. They all fear certain sectors of the press saying nasty things about them. And this has led to a green light to anarchy, jobbery, violence. And I have to say, you know, I've lived through the Brixton riots, the poll tax riots, I've seen those things, but nothing as sinister and dangerous as this. At least when they smashed up Trafalgar Square and the poll tax was dropped, those demonstrators had got what they were aiming at. This group want to fundamentally change us into a Marxist society that erases much of its history and doesn't even have a police force, so they will stop at nothing. There's no concession that can be given that will satisfy the leaders of this organisation. And we've got to stop this policy of appeasement, because that is exactly what it is. So there's a vacuum of political leadership. There is an astonishing vacuum of police leadership. I have to say, I felt from Wednesday onwards very sorry for those police officers in the street in London, you know, flares being chucked at them, bicycles being chucked at them, bottles being chucked at them. And of course, if any of them had responded too strongly, well, then, of course, you know, there would have been absolute uproar, outcry, what would have been termed police brutality. There are even reports on CNN saying, you know, how awful it is that police horses were used against innocent protesters. It's the same narrative as we're getting in much of the United States of America. Almost an excuse is being given for this behaviour.
Almost.
Because Donald Trump is in the White House and there is apparently a conservative government sitting in 10 Downing Street. Now, look, I'm not saying that every single person that went there yesterday went hell-bent on violence. That is clearly not the case. And I'm sure there's a very good number of those that went, and they would have been, a lot of them, white, middle class, university educated, because this is what our universities are drilling into people these days.
They're just Jewish revolutionary indoctrination centers. That's what they are.
Thought they were there because there are some terrible atrocities committed by the police force in this country and in America against the black community. The numbers don't really stack up. You know, over the course of the last 10 years, just over 160 people have died in police custody in this country. And only 13 of them were black. So you put that against the number of black people arrested compared to the number of white people being arrested. And actually, statistically, there is nothing in the argument. You could even argue in this country, you're more likely to die in police custody if you're white, but it's marginal. And the point I'm making is the figures in America bear that out too. Although I think we all accept there is a much bigger black-white divide in America in every way. In fact, for minorities of all kinds, through centuries, this has been one of the greatest, freest countries of the world to live in. It's why so many people still want to come here. But this historical revisionism is now incredibly dangerous. I mean, there's not a single statue, is there, up anywhere in this country that doesn't relate to a time when women didn't have votes, when we had a British Empire. Indeed, there are lots of statues up to people because of their military prowess. I mean, who's next? Is it Oliver Cromwell because of what happened in Ireland? I mean, there is no limit to this. As soon as you start to redraw, repaint history, you're on a very, very dangerous slope. Cressida Dick, the boss of the Met, despite 50 of her police officers now being injured, some in hospital, said she...
Cressida Dick, by the way, who's the chief of police here in London, she's a lesbian. Tells you everything you need to know.
Understood. Yes, and last Wednesday she understood why some of them took the knee in front of the baying mob outside Downing Street, because she understood the injustices behind this. Cressida Dick, this organisation, Black Lives Matter, wants to close down the Metropolitan Police. It really is time. You, other chief constables, other police chiefs, like the idiot in Bristol, who says he has no regrets about letting them tear down a statue and chuck it in the river, whatever the history of the Causton family may have been, it's about time they got up, you know, really, and got real with this. So there's a political vacuum, there is a policing vacuum. But maybe, just maybe, you'd pin your hopes on the Archbishop of Canterbury. Maybe he's the man that would step in.
Oh, no, don't expect anything from the church, because the church hasn't got a clue. Even the well-meaning church, in my experience, tragically, they just haven't got a clue. They want to read some stuff about, you know, some history about what happened in Russia and how many Christians were killed under communism in the 20th century alone, to maybe waken them up a little bit. They might want to push back.
Situation, but oh no, not a little bit of it. He, in fact, has been talking about the problems that white supremacy has caused over the centuries, and basically his best pal supporting the motives behind these protests. But you see, it's not the motives that are the problem of many of the people doing this. It is the organisation itself and the motives of those that run this organisation. That is where the danger comes. Now, into this vacuum, into this policy of appeasement, I would be very surprised if the situation did not deteriorate rapidly. Not only is a green light being given to those who want to go around and smash the place up, but there is uproar and outrage in Middle England. And there will be groups organised, coalescing around some right-wing figures who will want to start taking this into their own hands.
Well, that's already happening, and it's hardly, you know, you can hardly blame them. Anybody with any sensitivity and sensibilities about our culture, about our history, about our heritage, about our identity is furious about this, and the fact that it's been facilitated and justified by the media, by the police force. They get a pass, they get a buy and all of this. And of course, there are groups. Tommy Robinson and some other groups are coming down, and they've already come out and they're saying they're going to protect the statues. There's going to be not a protest, but there's an organized gathering in London on Saturday to protect the statues. And the danger is, of course, it's like already been, you know, framed as a far right thugs and everything else before they've even done anything. And it could have been another Charlottesville job. But what do you do? I mean, I'm thinking of going down there myself because it's important. This is our heritage. This is our history. And we cannot allow these Marxist filth to run riot like they're doing and just destroy it all. Somebody has to do something. But it's hardly thuggery to go down and say, no, we're going to protect statues and our history and our identity and our heritage and prevent you genuine thugs from destroying them in front of our very eyes.
Already, we've seen people who want to now go and defend the cenotaph, defend the Churchill statue. And that means we are not too far away from full-on street confrontations that'll be termed Black Lives Matters against the far right, because that's what the media will do. Either way, all of this will make divisions get worse, not better. This is now the biggest test of Boris Johnson's political career. Either he gets a grip on this, makes the argument, has the moral courage to make the case that we will not stand aside and see Marxist anarchists destroying the cities in our country. He needs to do that, or there's going to be more violence and more division. But he needs to do it very, very quickly.
Yeah, this is a powder keg. And I mean, you know, it's, what do you do? I mean, do you just stand by and let them wreck everything and pull everything out and do what they want and it's too late? Or do you take a stand? I mean, you know, either way, you're damned if you do, if you're damned if you don't, because the media will have their little narrative about far-right thuggery, and the divisions will be greater. And, you know, I grew up in Northern Ireland. I know what division is. I know what murder is. I know what the constant bloodbath is. I grew up in the 80s and early 90s in Northern Ireland. Okay, I've seen all that. I've seen it really badly. Gang, this would be worse. You know, that was actually people who were armed and could blow bars up and blow shopping malls up and blow cars up and walk into bars and open fire and kill 18 people and maim 40 others in one night. I know where this leads, but at the same time, this is important stuff. So it really is damned if you do, damned if you don't in this situation, because we've got a satanic media, far left media, which is, it wants division, and it wants this narrative of these evil far-right extremists against these, you know, freedom-fighting, justice-loving, you know, Black Lives Matter organization, and it'll be framed that it won't be anything about, probably, about the statues. It'll be that, oh, that's just an excuse for these far-right extremists to exercise their racism. And, of course, there will be people who lose control and say things which the media will pick up on, and that's what the quotes will be in the paper. I mean, that's why I'm saying this is a mess. I mean, who the hell would, in their right mind, want multiculturalism when you end up in this situation? There's like, this is like Laurel and Hardy. You know, this is another fine mess we've gotten ourselves into. Is it right? I think it is Laurel and Hardy. I mean, what a mess. I don't know where Richard wants to come in and comment on it, if he's still online. He's in Chicago there. There was 18 deaths as a result of this anarchy and chaos in Chicago last Saturday. It's the biggest, the largest amount of murders and deaths in Chicago since the 60s, I believe. I mean, how has this resulted in helping Black people and Black Lives Matter? 18 people were died, presumably, as far as I know, most of them were, if not all of them, were Black in Chicago last Saturday. 18 murders in a 24-hour period. Right, I'm going to play, you know, because, I mean, we just moved from this whole coronavirus thing into breakneck speed into this Black Lives Matter thing. But it doesn't change the fact that the coronavirus, the true devastation done here is economically and the social damage that's done. And just the livelihoods that have been destroyed of this. And we haven't even seen the beginning of the real fallout and consequences of this yet. But we're going to, in the next sort of 18 months or so, in the next 2 years and beyond. I'll just play a bit of Peter Schiff. He's an economist. He's actually Jewish. You know, obviously, again, you know, not all Jews are part of this conspiracy, or the people that I'm talking about, the synagogue of Satan, these international Jews. Schiff isn't one of them. I like Peter Schiff. He speaks plainly, and he doesn't hold back. And he's condemned this whole BLM thing too. But he knows his stuff when it comes to economic fundamentals. So he's worth listening to if you want to get a heads up on how to protect yourself economically against what's coming down the tracks with what the Fed's doing and their magic money tree of, you know, just printing to infinity. It's like, you know, playing chicken with an economic reality freight train. There's only going to be one winner here, you know?
Invest as little as £1 in the world's leading companies completely free, only with Trading 212. The Peter Schiff Show.
Today's podcast is brought to you by ExpressVPN, so thank ExpressVPN for supporting the Peter Schiff Show podcast. You probably don't think much about internet privacy on your home network, but ExpressVPN will secure your privacy and protect your information. So visit expressvpn.com/gold, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. Earlier today, the Federal Reserve concluded its most recent two-day meeting, and as widely expected. They did not raise interest rates. They left them at 0 to 0.25%. They didn't cut them to negative, although nobody was actually expecting the Fed to go there yet. But I think what few people probably anticipated was perhaps the most dovish statement that I've ever heard a Fed chairman make. And basically, it was in the Q&A that, you know, whenever they come out with an official statement, Powell always has a press conference. And again, this is a break with tradition because they didn't have a press conference after every meeting. They used to do it every quarter, and Powell decided to be more transparent. So he's doing it after every meeting. And of course, now it's a Zoom conference. So you get to see all the little people in their windows asking the Fed chairman some good questions. In fact, the best question was the last question, and I will talk about it later. But I want to focus on this topic right now, which was in response to a question really about what the Fed was going to do under certain circumstances, or if the Fed I don't even remember the exact question because I was so shocked by the answer that I think I kind of lost track of what question Powell was answering. I just realized that. But anyway, it had to do with rate hikes or, you know, when they might come or something like that. And then what Powell said was that the Fed is not even thinking about raising interest rates at this point. So not only is the Fed not thinking about raising rates, they're not even thinking about raising rates, which means a rate hike is nowhere on the horizon. In fact, in their official statement, they said the Fed was committed to leaving interest rates at zero and continuing its bond buying program into the year 2022. But the fact that they're not even thinking about raising interest rates really shows me that what the Fed is doing now really amounts to nothing but a monetary Hail Mary. I mean, the Fed is desperate. They know that everything is going to fall apart. And so they just got interest rates at zero, and they don't care what happens. It's like they've got their pedal to the metal, and they're going full speed ahead, and they just close their eyes. They don't even care what's on the road because it doesn't matter. Even if they go over a cliff and crash and burn, it doesn't matter because they're going to die anyway. I mean, that's basically what they're saying. I mean, I can't even believe that the markets can hear that comment and that the dollar didn't get hammered even more than it already was. Gold didn't go up even higher than it already was. I mean, it was probably up maybe about 20 bucks or a little less when that statement was made. I think it closed up about $24, 1739-ish. But really, if people understood that statement, gold would be a lot higher. And I have a feeling that as people chew on that overnight, gold is going a lot higher. And the U.S. dollar is going a lot lower. In fact, the dollar index was down again today. We closed above 96, but we did get through 96 earlier in the day. We got down to 95.71. So this is a new low for the move. We haven't taken out the March low yet before we ran all the way up to 103. But we've now dropped from 103 down to below 96 on the dollar index. But I have a feeling that this losing streak is going to continue, especially when people really dissect what Powell just said about not even thinking about raising interest rates, because that is such an incompetent and arrogant statement all at once. Because what you want is for your central bank to be thinking about what the scenarios might be that would require, you know, an earlier than expected rate hike. Like they're actually watching the data and they're going to, you know, see what happens. And, you know, maybe we ease too much. And so what are the signs that we need to look for that says we have to dial this back, that we have to withdraw this liquidity, that, you know, we added too much, that we've got to raise rates, or, you know, we've got to start shrinking our balance sheet. But they're not thinking about those things at all. And I think because they realize, if they thought about it, they'd realize that we're screwed. They'd realize that there's no way that they could raise interest rates. It's impossible without crashing the economy. And so since there's no way they can do it, they're not even going to think about it. They're just going to hope for the best, right? This is a complete experiment, right? They're like little kids with a chemistry set, and they're throwing all the chemicals together, and they're just hoping for the best. They have no idea, but they don't really care because they know the alternative is unthinkable, right? The actual raising interest rates would now do so much damage to this bubble that they can't even think about thinking about it, and so it's off the table. So that means anybody who was thinking, okay, when might the Fed raise rates? You know, that was kind of supporting the dollar, or that was kind of keeping the lid on gold because people didn't know when the Fed might hike. Well, now you know. They're never going to hike because they're not even thinking about hiking. I mean, how could you hike when you're not even thinking about it? You have to at least be thinking about something before you can do it, right? But they're not even deliberating. They're not even trying to bring up scenarios under which they may be forced to raise interest rates, right? They have no contingency plan, right? They have no plans. If inflation gets out of hand, there's no plans to do anything about it because they can't do anything about it. In fact, one of the points that Powell stressed several times, right, during his press conference was that, you know, we had really, really low unemployment for a long time, right? Before this COVID recession started, the unemployment rate was, what, 4% or less than that? And we didn't have any inflation, or at least the way the government measures it with the CPI, right? We had inflation, just not measurably more than 2% per year. And so Powell was saying, well, we now know that there is no trade-off between unemployment and inflation, which, of course, there never was, right? But now that Powell is saying that, well, the Fed no longer believes in the Phillips curve, that, you know, we're going to tolerate, and then he corrected himself, well, not really tolerate, we're going to enjoy low inflation. Rather, we're going to enjoy low levels of unemployment and not think that we need to raise rates. But wait a minute. We don't have low unemployment. We have high unemployment. We have double-digit unemployment. So what Powell was saying is that he is not going to watch the unemployment rate fall and be at all tempted to raise interest rates. Because according to Powell, we got to 4% unemployment and we had no inflation problem. So why should I care? I'm going to wait until the 16% unemployment we have now, or whatever it is, I'm going to wait all the way until it comes down to 4% or lower before we start thinking about raising rates, because we already learned a lesson that a low unemployment doesn't cause inflation, which is true. It doesn't. What causes inflation is the Fed's money printing. That's the inflation. But the Fed has now got a false sense of confidence that because they dodged that bullet, that they're going to dodge it again. But as I said in a prior podcast, we dodged a bullet only to step into a landmine. That's what's going to happen. We're not going to get lucky again. We're going to have massive inflation. In fact, we're going to have the opposite. Last time we had low unemployment and low inflation. And what Powell thinks we're going to have is low unemployment and low inflation again. We're not. We're going to have high unemployment and high inflation. The jobs are not going to come back, but the inflation is. That's what's going to happen. This is going to be stagflation. Something that the Fed doesn't even have on its radar is exactly where we're headed. And you can see that now in the foreign exchange market. You can see that now in the price of gold. Gold's going up, the dollar's going down. And the price declines that we initially saw during COVID, right, as everybody locked down and all the demand temporarily went away, well, now we're starting to see the price hikes, even though we got the CPI today, this morning, and we still didn't show anything. I think it was down 1/10, the official number for the prior month. But I think we're going to start to see going forward a noticeable pickup, even in the way the government measures consumer prices. But again, the Federal Reserve is going to do absolutely nothing about it. And I kind of think it's ironic, too, that later in the day, I got the news that the national debt just went through $26 trillion. It's added the last $1 trillion in just over a month. In fact, it's added $2 trillion in 2 months and 2 days. So we're adding about $1 trillion every 32 days, right? 1 month and 1 day to add $1 trillion in debt. You know, it took until 1986 before the national debt got to $2 trillion, right? So it took 210 years to run up the first $2 trillion national debt, and it took us 2 months and 2 days to run up the last $2 trillion of debt But this is going to continue. Now, I do think the pace is going to slow down. I mean, there's no way that we can stay on this pace. But, you know, Powell just basically waved the red flag at a bull today, the equivalent, when he's telling the government, hey, don't worry about the economy. I don't care what the data is. I don't care if it's a V or a W, whatever. We're keeping rates at zero no matter what. Right. I mean, we're just going for broke, literally, when it comes to 0% interest rates and quantitative easing. We're going to keep on buying bonds no matter how many bonds the Treasury is trying to sell. We've got your back. We're going to keep on buying them. Well, what the Fed is telling Congress is pass another stimulus, another trillion, another $2 trillion. We will monetize any debt that you want to sell to finance any government spending bill that you want, which means we're going to get more. We're going to get another stimulus based on this green light. I mean, who's going to stand against free money, especially in an election year, right, when the Republicans are vying with the Democrats to see who can buy the most votes? And since nobody has to raise anybody's taxes, the Federal Reserve is simply going to print all the money. Well, this is going to usher in even more stimulus. And so, yeah, I mean, we're going to keep getting the national debt rising, although I can't see that we can continue the pace of $1 trillion a month. I mean, we can't possibly add $12 trillion per year to the national debt, at least not yet. But I do think that once the Democrats have the White House and both houses of Congress, that may be the case. That may, in fact, happen, because if government is this reckless with Republicans in charge, if there's no opposition to deficits and deficits from Republicans, then why should we expect to have any opposition from Democrats? We shouldn't. But I wanted to talk about a few of the other comments that Powell made in the Q&A that followed his official statement. One of the comments that he made is he talked about all the people who, through no fault of their own, you know, the COVID-19, were out of work. They lost their jobs. And it was the government's responsibility to put those people back to work. Now, first of all, one of the reasons that a lot of people lost their jobs was because the government ordered that the businesses shut down. So it was the government that destroyed the jobs. So let's not forget about that. But these were the local governments. These are state and local governments. It's not the federal government's job to try to put people to work that the states are throwing out of work, right? It's the state's job to allow these businesses to reopen. But then it's not about the government putting people to work. That's what happens in a socialist economy. We want the free market to put people to work. We want people doing productive work, and they will do it so long as the government stays out of the way. It's not the government's job to create jobs. It's the government's job to get out of the way so that the free market can create the job. But Powell seems to think that the government and the Federal Reserve are supposed to create jobs, which they're not. But even if they were supposed to, they can't. You know, one of the other ironic statements that Powell made is, you know, they were talking about inflation and the Fed's failure to hit its target, right? And Powell was like, you know, we have to remain humble about our ability to create inflation or something like that. I mean, the one area where the Fed doesn't need to have humility is creating inflation, because that's the only thing the Fed can do. And it's creating massive inflation. In fact, I think the Fed is now creating inflation for the history books. I mean, we're going to go through what will be historically one of the greatest episodes of inflation the world has ever seen, courtesy of the Fed. So the Fed is great at creating inflation. What it's lousy at creating is economic growth and jobs. It can't do that at all. But for some reason, Powell is confident in the Fed's ability to do that, right? He's very arrogant when it comes to his ability to do something he can't do. And he's humble about the Fed's ability to do the only thing that it can do, which is create inflation. But I think the best question he got was the last one. And I'm not sure who asked it, but it was a great question, right? And so this is what some guy asked.
Anyway, folks, you can go and listen to, I'm going to have to wrap up, but if you wanted to listen to that, that's Peter Schiff, S-C-H-I-F-F, and you can hear the rest of that podcast that he did 18 hours ago. Until next week, have a great week, folks. It's very precarious times here for all of us, not just in the U.S. We're having the same stuff going on here in the U.K. as well, so stay safe, everyone. And I will be back next Thursday, same time, 5 till 6 Eastern time and 10 till 11 here in London, the UK. All right. Bye now.